Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
We're the fourth winningest franchise in the league since 2000. All right, that means in the upper quartile of winners, we're in the top quartile of that upper quartile. That's rare air.
Hello and welcome back to the Upper Quartile Podcast. I am your host, Jim Aiello, and I am joined as always by our Indianapolis Colts beat writer, James Boyd. James just got back from the NFL owners meetings in Orlando. Lots to talk about. We're going to get into all the kind of the big news surrounding the Colts, L'Jarius Sneed, what happened there, the Daniel Hunter pursuit, some news on Anthony Richardson and Julian Blackmon. And then maybe if we have some time, we'll get into some of the new rule changes and how they'll affect the Colts. But let's rewind to L'Jarius Sneed, because that's been the topic du jour around the Indianapolis Colts for the last couple of weeks. What did you learn about what happened there with the Colts? We know maybe they were exploring trading for the cornerback from the Chiefs, but didn't seem like maybe the pursuit was a little blown out of proportion. What did you hear?
That's more or less my understanding of the situation. Chris Ballard really wouldn't talk about it other than saying that L'Jarius Sneed is a good player, but from not only talking to people within the building or around the franchise, it became pretty clear that after Sneed was franchise tagged, that the price to get him was probably a little bit too high at that point, because then you have to factor in the draft compensation and also the big contract that he ultimately landed with the Tennessee Titans. So they will see him twice a year, and that'll be interesting to understand or to see if he has some big games or some bad games. Either way, I think that both fan bases are going to have something to say whenever he is involved in a play. But surely, ultimately, the Colts felt like they had other needs that they could focus in on, and that he probably just wasn't worth the price tag, meaning, again, the big, massive contract plus the draft compensation. And also factoring in, and this is just my own personal look at L'Jarius Sneed, who's a really good player, but he also was penalized a lot, you know, last year. And I think that's something that can be kind of a deterrent for teams who may not have the same, obviously, defensive stoutness or just the upfront power that the Chiefs have. I think that Chris Jones obviously makes a lot of players look good. And, you know, not to say L'Jarius Sneed isn't good on his own, but I do wonder how he'll look when he maybe isn't in that system. You know, can I say L'Jarius Sneed is as good as a Sauce Gardner or Patrick Surtain, who, you know, you drop him on any team, they're probably the lockdown corner guy? I'm not sure. But obviously, I think that it was worth inquiring about. I don't know if I agree or disagree with them not pursuing him. But ultimately, it was looked at, but not looked at nearly as deeply as maybe some fans had hoped. And they've moved on. And that became pretty clear, obviously, when it didn't happen. So it's not like, you know, seeing the compensation for the Titans, it's not like the Colts couldn't do it. It is that they chose not to, and they chose to go another direction. And obviously, a lot of their free agency moves so far, outside of Raekwon Davis being brought in from Miami, it's been their own guys. And so, again, maybe not the news some fans want to hear, but, you know, again, Chris Ballard didn't go too deep on that hardly at all. It was just one of those things where he was like, hey, you know, obviously he's a good player. We looked at him a little bit, but the price, ultimately, from my understanding around the organization, is that it was a little bit too high. So they moved on. And now my question is, you know, what do you do at cornerback to make sure that you don't handicap yourself? Maybe that's not the right word. I don't want to use that word. A lot of respect for disability community. I'll say to hold that group back, because I do think that they're really young and really green right now. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's the big question. We'll get to it in a second. I just I will say that when I saw the compensation for L'Jarius Sneed, I was a little surprised that it was, you know, a future third. I thought that was a little bit lower than I was expecting for him, obviously. I don't want to be a hypocrite either. So I am a big fan of L'Jarius Sneed's game. I think I've talked about the compensation I probably would have given up. I guess it would have been too high. And I am curious as to what you think. If there are other other factors that went into why do you think not just the Colts, but other teams maybe weren't as in on L'Jarius Sneed. Obviously the compensation of the trade, obviously the big contract. He's got the knee history, I know.
Yeah, I was gonna say that may have been a factor as well. Not only for the Colts, but just around the league, is that he's got, you know, it's not like the knee held him back from playing last year, but
right.
And this is all, you know, just if you want to look it up, you can, listeners out there. But talking to our Chiefs reporter, Nate Taylor, you know, this is a guy who, in L'Jarius Sneed, missed a lot of practice, you know, and it wasn't always, you know, was pretty much always on the injury report, especially in the second half of the season. Was something going on with his knee? Didn't always practice a lot. Wasn't always, you know, a full practice, all those things. You know, now he played at a high level. But again, do you want to give, you know, $80 million, $55 million guaranteed to a guy who, you know, may have some knee injury history? And I do think that if anyone would know about L'Jarius Sneed, you know, his outside of the Chiefs and his health, his character, his play level, all of those things, it probably will be Chris Ballard, because he worked with the Chiefs and he's still, to my knowledge, very, you know, close. I don't think he's burned any bridges since he's been in the NFL with any staffs, but I would imagine that the one that you worked for and has had that much success and you helped have some success, you know, you would kind of keep those lines of communication open. So that may have been another factor as well. And he's 27. And then just overall, you know, you look at cornerbacks when they hit 30, it kind of fluctuates. Really, cornerbacks, they kind of fluctuate anyways as far as the elite ones. It's only a few when I say that they're good, like, or great year in and year out. Sometimes, you know, like a perfect example is like, and a lot of it probably with Tre'Davious White is with injury, but it's like he was an all-pro back in 2019. And then you get that label and you earned it. But, you know, I look at some of the reports from different players, and this goes for a lot of different positions, but it's like, you know, all pro safety or all pro cornerback, all pro running back. And it's like, well, how long ago was that? And how many times was this person, this player? Not discrediting their talent, but I do think that consistency at the cornerback position is a little bit shakier than most. Because I mean, a few inches, literally one way or the other, is the difference between a catch and a you know, PBU or something like that. It doesn't always work out that way. So, you know, that's kind of my understanding of just the whole totality of not only L'Jarius Sneed, but just how the cornerback market might be looked at by the league itself when it comes to paying those guys big money.
Yeah, I think you're dead on. And Robert Mays in the Athletic Football Show did a good job of kind of breaking that down of kind of talking about, like, cornerback play year to year does tend to fluctuate. You don't get elite production from the same guys over and over again, unless they happen to be, you know, the top tier guys you had mentioned, Pat Surtain, Sauce Gardner, guys like that. So I think, you know, understanding where the league is on a guy like L'Jarius Sneed, who was elite last year. I don't think there's any debate that he was elite last year, but that was the first time he had been elite. And it came at his age, you know, 26 season, and he's 27 now. And I guess that there is legitimate concern that between the knee injury history, the fact that he hasn't put, you know, elite production on tape for 4 years, I can understand where there is some hesitation. That said, I remain a huge fan of L'Jarius Sneed, and I remain a fan of the moves that the Titans have made, obviously, to and you wrote about this last week. I think it was a really, really good story about, and this is pre L'Jarius Sneed, I believe, about the moves that the Titans and the Texans have made to kind of bolster their team. The Titans, I still don't think they're at the Colts level yet, just mostly because I'm not a big Will Levis supporter, but they have made some interesting moves. Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins will give Levis every chance to be successful. That's interesting. Chidobe Awuzie and L'Jarius Sneed will absolutely fortify their secondary in ways that they needed. So I think it's a good move for them. They had the money to spend. I'm not sure it's going to put them over the top. So maybe it isn't a good move for them in terms of, you know, what they're committing for their immediate future. But anyway, I still like L'Jarius Sneed. I just didn't want to, I wanted to talk about some of the, you know, the reasons why and why not to make it fair. I ultimately am a fan of him, but to get back to your original
just
question,
sign me up for MPJ and Sneed, Michael Pittman Jr., L'Jarius Sneed. I need it. It's going to happen. And when it does, the AFC South Twitter will burn, because either side's going to have like, this guy stinks, this guy's great, he's a bum, he's not. So it's going to be a lot of trash talk, and I can't wait for that matchup.
It's going to be great. I mean, you saw, I think the big thing that put L'Jarius Sneed's name over the top was how he kind of bullied Tyreek Hill on those, those
yeah.
plays. You ain't doing that. You're not doing that to Michael Pittman Jr. Like, nope. I mean, you can press him, but you ain't going to push him to the ground. That's for sure. So, and if you do, he's not going to do it without a fight. So it's going to be a fun matchup, those guys for sure. But let's get back to the question that is more pertinent to the Colts right now. And that you had brought up a little bit ago is what now, right? Like, this is a secondary that still has a lot of questions, for me and for you of, okay, who are you trusting in the secondary? It's funny. Let me set this up in a different way. Chris Ballard, when talking about why the defense didn't perform as well last year and people were kind of speculating about the defensive coordinator's job, was he had said, I didn't really give him a lot of options in the secondary. We went with a lot of youth in the secondary. Now, it sounded like when he said that, that meant he was going to pivot to maybe adding some quality veterans to try to bolster the secondary. It doesn't seem like that's the direction they're headed now. What did you gather from Chris Ballard about what they're going to do at cornerback going forward?
Yeah, because I asked, and we all were sitting there like, hey, wait a second. You guys are really young, and I understand that you have to play guys for them to get experience, but I just wonder if you're – and I asked him this. I was like, do you think that you might be expecting too much from your – younger cornerbacks? Like, do you expect, not even that they're young, it's just that you know, obviously Juju Brents, you probably need him to be a player, and if you miss on him, it's just a bad miss, because I mean, you draft a guy in the second round at cornerback to be a starter in the NFL. That's just the bottom line. You don't draft a guy like him that high to be a reserve. And they're really high on him. They think that he has a lot of potential, showed some flashes last year, got to stay healthy, obviously. And then you look at the other spots. So if you start Kenny Moore, if you start Juju Brents, there's another third spot open. Is it Dallas Flowers? Is it Jalen Jones? You know, Chris Ballard likes both of those guys, spoke highly of both of those guys. But my thing is, when you have an undrafted player in Dallas Flowers coming off the torn Achilles, when you have a seventh-round pick in Jalen Jones, who showed some stuff last year and certainly had some moments, I just wonder if you're betting too much on one of those guys hitting and just the rarity of them hitting. We talk about how the cornerback market, you know, fluctuates, or cornerback play fluctuates. I just don't know if I would trust one of those guys to be my starter. Now, if you hit on them, it's great. They're cheap. They're there for a couple of years. You get to keep building. But if they're not, I think that you're going to be very exposed in a division where they have playmakers. I mean, we talked about Will Levis and he's the guy. The Titans are doing everything in their power to find out. They gave him, you know, Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins. That's two number one receivers. So they're going to get matched up against those young cornerbacks that you have. You know, you look at Houston, you know, obviously Nico Collins looked like the all-world receiver in the regular season finale, but that was without Tank Dell, who's going to be back and in the mix. And then obviously the Jaguars took a step back by losing Calvin Ridley. But again, you were looking at Trevor Lawrence, who former number one pick, and asking him to pick on some of these younger corners. And I just don't know if you can build your roster with like gym guys. So I found this guy who was a gym. Obviously you found, you know, Zaire Franklin, who was a gym in the seventh round. Even a guy like EJ Speed, you know, might've outplayed where you picked him. And then the perfect example I can give you and why I'm a bit concerned is Rodney Thomas. Seventh round pick, played pretty good in 2022. I think he like led the team in interceptions or tied for the team high. And then 2023 came and he took a really big step back and was not, just candidly, he was not a starting caliber safety in his second year. He regressed. And I just don't know if you can roll the dice on that. But he sounds high on those guys. I wouldn't be shocked if the Colts did draft a cornerback at 15 to potentially, like, you know, shore some things up. However, I also wouldn't be surprised if they didn't, because he sounds pretty high on those guys. We asked about other free agents, and Chris Ballard was saying, like, hey, we like what we have in-house. And that is a gamble that – it can either pay off very well or it can backfire tremendously. And either way, I'm going to be there to evaluate it. So I know you're like chomping at the bit to weigh in. So go ahead, please.
Well, we saw it backfire. I mean, obviously this guy's going to have more experience, but we saw it backfire last year. This gave up. You've written about it 100 times. How much of the explosive plays they gave up, how they got roasted against CJ Stroud in the last game of the year, in the pivotal last game of the year. And again, they weren't fully healthy at that point. Didn't have Julian Blackman, who we will touch on a little bit later. Here's what I want to do. If I'm Chris Ballard, you have to believe in yourself as a general manager. You have to believe you're a good talent evaluator. You have to believe you're a good scout and drafter. However, and you're going to get into this in a story that I think people should look forward to, but I'm sorry. I look back at his draft history of cornerbacks, and it's not good. It's just plainly not good. I'm looking at Quincy Wilson was his first cornerback drafted. Didn't work out, not even a little bit. Nate Harrison's fine. He was the slot corner. Didn't last long with the Colts to trade him to the Jets, I think, for a 7th-round pick. Didn't play last year. Rocky Sin, up and down. He's been okay. They, again, traded him away when they weren't. That wasn't a guy they're looking to re-sign. 2nd-round pick, by the way. Isaiah Rodgers showed some flashes, but ultimately, you know, didn't last for different reasons. But that's, you know, again, I'm not going to put that on Ballard necessarily. It's not necessarily his fault on that one. But now we're looking at Juju Brents, who might have some talent, play well. But Darius Rush has already been cut. That was a 5th-round corner, right? Like, Jalen Jones. I'm sure I missed somebody here as I'm flipping through their draft history, but it's been unimpressive. Flatly, it's been an unimpressive Chris Ballard's draft history at cornerback. And so now, he's not only relying on that, on his ability to make up for it, but relying on guys that he picked in the 7th round or undrafted free agents, and even a 2nd-rounder in Juju Brents, who, again, flashed well last year. But if you look at his numbers, they're fine. They're not great. They're okay.
Right. And I get it. You can find those like gems. Cause even Legarius Sneed, I believe, was a later pick. You know,
in the 4th rounder, I think.
And, you know, so you don't always find those guys. But here's my pushback. And this was somewhat to Ballard and just somewhat to a lot of people who might be high on these guys. There is nothing wrong in believing in your guys and trying to find, obviously, the gems, because, I mean, every draft pick is valuable. You want to, ideally, you want to find all of your players in the draft. However, if you look at the history of the NFL, who are the greatest players at any position, they're probably drafted, the majority of them, in the top 3 rounds. That's just the reality of it. So it's like, how many guys can you find that are that diamond in the rough, and like everyone else missed on this guy, but I hit on him? I'm just not sure if that's something that I can fully support. So, you know, Chris Ballard didn't say they were done. Obviously, there's veterans out there that they can still look at. Steven Nelson, Stephon Gilmore, who's older, but in my opinion, would still be probably be a better cornerback than a Jalen Jones in year two or Dallas Flowers in year two or three. That's just my personal opinion. But the vibe that I got from Chris Ballard is that they're going to be patient. And I know some fans might not want to hear that, but that is the reality. I'm just not sure they're going to go out. And at this point, they really can't. There is no more like splash signings to make at cornerback. But who's left, it's slim pickings. And it would just be, in my opinion, probably a stopgap. It wouldn't be a long-term answer anyways, which they might be looking for in the aforementioned players being Dallas and Jalen. So we'll see.
It's a risky approach. Yeah, it's a risky approach, and not one that this is something I put on Twitter recently, was that it's not the approach I would take when I had a rookie quarterback that I believed in. It's just not. It's if I have a rookie quarterback that I believe is capable of taking me where I want to go, I feel like you double down during his rookie quarterback, rookie contract years. And the Colts have, again, I don't want to, they've re-signed their own players. They've retained their good players. That shouldn't be something that is dismissed. However, have they gone to the lengths that I think other teams have gone to try to build around their rookie quarterback? It doesn't always work, by the way. I'm not saying this is like a tried and true, proven, it's easy. Look at what the Chargers did. The Chargers spent a ton of money during Justin Herbert's rookie year contract and didn't work out. I mean, the playoffs once, I think, maybe twice. I think it was actually just the once, but didn't work out and cost the coach's job, cost the GM his job. I get that. It's not always going to work out. However, I'm always going to lean on the side of being more aggressive, especially when you think you have the guy at quarterback. So I understand Colts fans' frustrations on this, because it's just not the method that I would prefer. I would prefer a little bit more what Houston's doing. Houston's lost a few players, don't get me wrong, but they've added quite a bit of talent. I mean, shoot, they were in on Keenan Allen. Can you imagine that team if they had gotten Keenan Allen as well? Like, they were with Nico Collins and Tank Dell. See how the Colts secondary would hold up against that. And they still might. They still might go after another receiver and try to get better there. So it's an interesting spot the Colts are in. I bring up the Texans, though, for a reason. They did end up with Neil Hunter at edge rusher, and that's going to make them very, very scary. Now, they lost Jonathan Grenard, who was a good young pass rusher as well. So I don't want to just say that they automatically upgraded and they get so much better. They did lose some guys. But they did get to Neil Hunter, who was the best pass rusher on the market. I think he had 16 and a half sacks last year. He's been a Pro Bowler. He's one of the best edge rushers in the NFL. Colts were in on him and lost out. Well, what did you hear about that at the owners' meetings?
Yeah, so I can confirm the ESPN report. Stephen Holder reported this about a week ago that they were in on Danielle Hunter. I can confirm that as well. But ultimately, he probably just chose to go home. I know he's from that area. And also, this is one of those things where, and this is just me speaking from my own perspective, this is not speaking for anybody else. And that's in relation to the home comment as well. But if you're in free agency, you have a chance to sort of go. He played his high school ball in Texas, got a chance to go home to Texas. And when you're weighing your options, it's like, this team has a guy. And if you feel like this team that you're going to join has a CJ Stroud, has a player that you believe can get you there, even as a defensive player, you're probably like, man, that's an enticing spot. So I can't say that, and again, I'm not speaking for Danielle Hunter. I'm just trying to think as if I were in his shoes, it might be more enticing for me to get paid because money wasn't an issue, from my understanding with the Colts, but get paid and also have a chance to join a team that has a guy. And as high as we both are on Anthony Richardson, and we'll get more into that later on in this podcast, and as high as Shane and Chris Ballard and the entire franchise is on Anthony, I can't say for certain that he's a guy yet. He could be, but if you're a player that's 29, you're probably going to sign for a few years. You're going to be with this franchise. And when you're prime, the latter end of your prime, you probably want to use that prime with a team that feels like they're going for it. And I think signing him, and obviously, having CJ there, and then even bringing in Joe Mixon, like, all these different moves are made with the intent of trying to win it probably next year, it seems like, with this team. So, it's not like the Colts didn't have any interest in him. They just missed out. And that speaks to the larger point of Kwity and Dio. I mean, I am curious about this. Chris Ballard, in true Chris Ballard fashion, defended his guys, defended his picks. Hey, Kwity's a good player. Dial's a good player. And in my mind, I'm like, hey, nothing's wrong with them being good players, but are they elite? And I say this because this is what Chris Ballard didn't touch this, wouldn't comment on it, but, and that's smart GMing, but, I'm thinking to myself, like, well, talk about you believe in these guys. Kwity's fifth-year option is coming up, I believe, in May. And so got about a month to decide how much you believe in that guy and if you want to pay him that much money on a fifth-year option. And I didn't get a definitive answer to that from Chris Ballard, so we'll see. But it feels a bit twofold where the team, again, I can confirm that the team was interested in Danielle Hunter, but also talking to Chris Ballard directly, they're high on Kwity and Dial and their ability to elevate even more. And I'm just like, I don't know. We'll see. Obviously, the pass rush, the defensive line last year was one of the strongest units of the Colts' team overall. I don't want to dismiss that. Obviously, had the Indianapolis record for sacks in the season. I believe it was 51 or something like that. So they showed up and they definitely did their job. And I'm excited to see what Charlie Partridge does, with his pedigree being one of the best defensive line coaches in college football, joining the Colts and seeing what he can do there. But I still think that they were missing that elite, and it's hard because, you know, they get paid a lot of money and these teams don't give them up when they become these guys. But it's like, man, can you find that elite edge rusher that will give you just that extra oomph to get there, get home, and affect a few more plays? I think about the last game of the season where C.J. Stroud kind of torched him. He didn't have to deal with much pressure around the edge at all. I know he got hit by Buckner on his first pass, which was that 75-yard heater to Nico Collins. And it's like, after that, he's barely touched. So, I don't know. I'm curious to hear your thoughts just on, how, like, if you're Chris Ballard, GM hat on, how do you view that position of edge rusher when you've invested in, obviously, with picks and bringing in a guy like Samson Ebukam, but maybe there's a gap between, okay, we're really good, but we're not elite.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Two things. I'll start with this. One is, you made a pretty compelling argument for why you would pick the Texans over the Colts. Yep. I would.
I mean, it's pretty. It didn't have to be compelling. It's just obvious to me right now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's what I would do too if I were another player, because I do think the Texans have the edge in the division with, again, the quarterback and the supporting cast and the coaching staff that they have. It's they're the team everybody's chasing, and if you're Danielle Hunter and you're going to give essentially a fully guaranteed contract, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Two, here's what I'll say. I'll say two things about this. I have serious doubts about what Kwity Paye and Dayo Odangbo can bring in their fourth years of their contracts, but I'm a little hesitant to say that the pursuit of Danielle Hunter is reflective of that, only because I think Danielle Hunter is such an elite player that, and at a premium position like pass rusher, that you got to look into it. If you can get in there and get another pass rusher who can make a huge impact difference on you, again, maybe disrupt a guy like C.J. Stroud, Trevor Lawrence, those guys, then you got to look into it and got to be interested in it, even if you have pass rushers you believe in. That said, I look at Kwity Paye's numbers from last year. 8.5 sacks seems impressive. It is impressive, frankly. But it came on 9 quarterback hits. That is an insane level of luck for it, frankly, when you're transitioning 9 quarterback hits into 8.5 sacks. Just to kind of give you Dio had 8 sacks and 17 quarterback hits, just to give you an impression of that. Like, Kwity, when he got to the quarterback, it just happened to be a sack almost every time, which is kind of doesn't usually happen. And I'll tell you this, I'm looking at PFF's pressure rate numbers. Quidipe among pass are 7.1% pressure rate. That ranked 183rd last year. Dio Odengbo, 8.3%. That ranked 166th. The guy who was their best was Samson Ebukam, 11.1%, and he had 9.5 sacks. So Ebukam's numbers look at least a little bit more legitimate than Quidipe's and Dio Odengbo's. If I'm looking at those numbers and I'm Chris Ballard, again, you expect these guys, they're young and ascending players. You think they'll get better. They'll get a little more pressure. But those numbers scare me. I'll be honest. I'm looking at those numbers and saying, man, they're not the pressure that they did get. They did convert into sacks. Will we get that lucky again? Because those numbers tend to fluctuate as well. Is if you're a high pressure pass rusher, usually you're going to fall into more sacks. You're just going to rack up more sacks that way. These guys got close to double digits without getting that much pressure, at least comparatively to other pass rushers in the NFL. So yeah, I'm a little concerned about what the Colts pass rush is going to be in terms of racking up sacks, because I think they got a little bit lucky in terms of total sack numbers compared to the amount of pressure they actually generated last year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it was definitely sometimes we were looking at the numbers, like at some point, I think we had this conversation a few times throughout the season where it was like, all right, water has to find its level. And it did. So that's one of the things where maybe the sack, you know, it's cool to say you got the Indianapolis sack record, 40 years, this franchise being here, you're number one and having the most sacks. But obviously there's more to it than just sacks. And you look at a lot of pass rushers. And a perfect example, obviously he's like number one or number two in the league as far as pass rushers go. Myles Garrett, he didn't always have in the greatest sack numbers. And the same thing with Micah Parsons, especially him, probably more so him. Like, maybe not the greatest sack numbers, but just if you actually watch their tape, they affect so much. Then you see, okay, that's why this guy gets paid, whatever, whatever, because, you know, he forced this quarterback to throw it a half second early or a half second later or whatever the case may be. And that ended up being a sack for someone else, a, you know, interception, a pass defense, or just a simple incompletion that might have got you off the field that makes you more valuable. So it's more than that. But, you know, it's one of those things where, again, you missed out for whatever reason on a guy like Danielle Hunter, and you got to see him too. So again, me being Petty James, I'm looking forward to L'Jarius Sneed and, you know, Michael Pittman Jr. And I'm looking forward to, you know, Bernard Raimann and Danielle Hunter or Bernard Raimann or no, sorry, I'm sorry, Danielle Hunter and, you know, their right tackle. So, we'll see.
And Willie Anderson, by the way, on the other side of that. So there ain't no breaks for the Colts tackle.
That's a good point. I even thought about that. Like, so, you know, Braden Smith, I know he was getting healthy through surgery, and they were and the Colts look forward to having him back, but him and Bernard Raimann will definitely have their work cut out for them against a team that again feels like they're the front runner for the AFC South. Now, obviously, you got to play the games. That's why I love the NFL. And it's been growing on me. As everyone knows, I'm a basketball guy at heart, or that's the first sport that I ever loved. But what I've loved about covering the NFL, watching more NFL games, and just being around the league more intensely over the last few years is that the parity is like none other. Like, you can see this stuff on paper and one play here, one play there, and it changes. And so it's not a guarantee, but I would say definitely if I'm like a betting man, I feel pretty good about where the Texans are relative to where the Colts are. And not saying the Colts have gotten like any worse. Obviously, there's still some moves to be made. Like, people don't want to hear that. But the biggest thing is Anthony Richardson's health. That will determine most of their season, in my opinion. But beyond that, yeah, they've been pretty conservative with their moves and their decisions. And that's on brand for them. And we might look up in months from now and be like, you know what? They were right. But we'll see. Like I said, they have some – they made sure they didn't, like, have any gaping holes, like, from guys leaving, their own veterans leaving. But, you know, even beyond the, I just go back to defensive back, cornerback specifically. It's like, man, that's the one thing. Like, I can kind of get behind Quiddy, Dio, because they've at least produced and they've proven that they're starter caliber players. I don't know, Jim, if I feel the same way about that defensive secondary right now. And I guess we can, you know, transition a little bit and talk more about this. So one thing that Chris Ballard did say was that the team has, you know, re-engage with Julian Blackman on the free agency market. Because that was the one question we all wanted to ask. It was like, hey, wait a second. you know, you're talking about re-signing your guys and how much money you spent on your own guys. And, you know, he's like, hey, you know, if we don't re-sign these guys, then you guys are going to be killing us for saying, you know, for not, you know, re-signing these guys. I was like, you're darn Skippy. I would definitely be on you about that. But beyond cornerback, the other glaring hole in this defense is safety. And, you know, it was probably comforting for some Colts fans to hear that they've re-engaged with Julian Blackmon. So he's not, you know, completely, you know, out. I know that there was a report from Jordan Schultz that he visited, I believe, you know, the 49ers and the Bills. And so obviously there's interest there. But the one thing that's different from cornerback and safety, especially in this market, is that the safety market is still kind of saturated right now. There's still some good players out there that haven't been signed up, namely Justin Simmons, who's older, but still an elite player, in my opinion. He's been an all-pro, I believe, four times, a second-team all-pro four times in his career, was just selected last year again. So it's not like he's fallen off by any means. He's still a good player. But I think that with Julian, he's trying to navigate a market that maybe isn't as fruitful as he may have anticipated, or vice versa. The Colts are kind of just knowing, like, okay, we value you at this. Let's, you know, give you opportunity to see what's out there, and then maybe we can re-engage because there's more of an understanding on all parties of what your actual value is on the market. Because Julian's been a really good player the last few years, but obviously some teams might feel like, okay, you've had the two major injuries throughout your career. He had the ACL last year of college, the Achilles in 2021. Now, he's years removed from that at this point. He's played pretty well. Last year ended on IR with a shoulder injury. Didn't require a surgery, but he's played, I believe, 85% of his snaps over the last two seasons, I think. So he's been available, been a playmaker, and really shined at strong safety. But that's one, Jim, where I feel like if the Colts don't retain him, we're going to have another podcast where I'm like, do they have any DBs out there with experience?
No, it's a fair question. I mean, I'm less concerned about safety because, as you said, the market is still, you know, there's some guys out there that they could get. But again, Julian Blackmon is, you know him. You know what he is. You know what he's not. But he's young, and he had a really good year for you last year. So it makes a ton of sense to try to bring him back. I'm not hitting the, you know, my panic meter on the 1 to 10 is not as high as it is at cornerback for the Colts. But I definitely, I know where you're at. On that, I definitely think it's somebody they have to, if they don't re-sign him, then they really need to get into somebody else. Because like you said, the secondary is, you're going to rely on, you're going to be putting, you're going to be putting Bradley back in the spot that Chris Ballard kind of said, I put him in a tough spot last year. Well, guess what? You might be in that tough spot again if you start going with a lot of youth. I mean, if you start relying on guys like Nick Cross and Jalen Jones and Dallas Flowers, I mean, I know some of these guys have higher draft. Yeah, higher draft pedigree than others, but that's a lot to ask.
I think you're asking
Gus Bradley.
A lot of Gus Bradley and a lot of those players to all come together at once. That's the one thing, like, if you're like, we're going to roll the dice on this one player, I'm like, okay, it's risky. But you're right now, as the roster shakes out, you'd be relying on a couple players to all step up, to all get it, to all perform at a high level at the same time. And I just don't think that's realistic for any sports team, especially football. So we'll see. I do think that at the very least, they have to sign a safety, whether it's Julian, whether it's Justin Simmons, whether it's Quandre Diggs. Even if you feel like, okay, Nick Cross, we drafted you pretty high. We essentially drafted you with the idea of you being a first-round pick if you had stayed another year in college. Even if you hand the keys to him, you still need another safety, in my opinion, another veteran safety to help shore up that back end. And I know, you know, Chris Beller was telling us, you know, he's really high on, obviously, Nick Cross, and he think that Ronnie Thomas can have a better season. And, you know, he even mentioned Daniel Scott, their draft pick from last year towards ACL, and he was telling us how dedicated he was, sort of practice every day, really smart player. And I'm like, yeah, you know, no disrespect to Daniel Scott, but I'm not buying the injured rookie safety is going to come back and be the starter. And not that Chris Beller was saying that, but again, I look at him, maybe he's like a special teams guy or something like that, but I have a hard time believing that. And that's Chris Ballard being a good GM and giving some praise to the entire room, but I'm like, huh, that room needs, you know, somebody in it that's kind of an adult, and I would expect that to be, you know, Julian or someone else. So I'm curious to see how that market kind of goes for him, how he feels about being coming back ultimately. But I do think that if I was in Julian's shoes, I would similar to how teams feel about keeping their same players. You know what to expect as a player. You know the system. You know the coaches. You know how you're going to be used, and you know you can perform well there. Not saying that you don't have the confidence you can go elsewhere and play well as well, but then you have to learn a lot of different things, learn different people, move, all those things. Whereas with Indianapolis, maybe you can continue to ascending in your career as a really good player. Because I tell you, we talked about, you know, how much the Colts were missing, not having the starting quarterback all year, and JT being in and out of the lineup. I think one of the biggest losses was Julian Blackman, particularly in that regular season finale where the Houston just ate him alive on the back end because he wasn't in there to really shore it up. So we'll see. Obviously, that's for me, that's like the next thing I'm paying attention to is like, okay, what safety are they going to sign? Like I said, I think they're going to be more patient at cornerback, and they're going to be patient at safety as well, but I just don't think they're going to – I could see the Colts obviously drafting a cornerback 15th overall, whether it's, you know, Quinyon Mitchell, you know, whether it's Tyrann Arnold from Alabama, one of those guys or somebody else who's, you know, one of the higher ranked cornerbacks in this class. I mean, nobody's drafting a safety, you know, number 15 overall. So
it's not a great safety class.
You're probably going to have to, you know, go out and get a veteran. And again, if you're asking me, get experience because you're going to be inexperienced at some spots. And just being honest, you're going to be inexperienced at the most important spot, which is quarterback. So, you know, you talk about making his life easier with all these offensive players and stuff like that. Get him a defense that can, you know, give him opportunities to get back on the field, because I don't think that, you know, it's probably fair to expect Anthony to get healthy and then just elevate the entire team in every position when he's not playing every position. So we'll see. But I would say if I had to pick, like, you know, see the future, their next move will probably be a safety signing of some sort. And it could be Julian Blackman.
Yeah, I like the idea. I like the concept. I was thinking about it, looking at like the Bears and what they did with Kevin Byard. I think everybody was a little surprised they handed him, you know, so much money so early in free agency. But if you look at that secondary, they got some really talented players. Obviously, they paid Jalen Johnson, and he's been around a little bit. But they're young. They got Kyler Gordon, Jalen Johnson. These guys need. I think Jalen Johnson's only 25. I think Kyler Gordon's younger. Jaquan Brisker is young. I think. And again, I bring up the Bears mostly because Matt Eberflus is running that defense, and that's a familiar name in Indianapolis. And he brings in a guy like Kevin Byard, who is, as you say, the adult in the room, right? He's been around a lot of defenses. He knows, you know, how to identify offenses. He knows how to get guys lined up. He knows how to communicate to his secondary. I think that's a big plus for the Bears, even if Byard has lost a step. So I definitely could see something like that benefiting the Colts, who appear to be going in the direction of having a really young secondary, of getting a veteran in there who can make an impact and really help. And again, I don't want to dismiss Kenny Moore. Kenny Moore is a lot of those things for them. But having a safety kind of looking over the whole thing, over the top of the defense, and providing that veteran leadership, I think it's something that was valuable to Matt Eberflus, and therefore may be valuable, you know, to Chris Ballard and the Colts. I know they're running different defenses now, but it's something to consider. I do want to get into what you had mentioned about Anthony Richardson. I feel like you've alluded to it a few times. The Colts are going to put a lot on him this year. I don't need to go over my feelings or James's feelings on Anthony Richardson. We'll go over them more. We've talked about him a lot, but it was interesting to get your feedback from what both Chris Ballard and Shane Steichen had to say about Anthony Richardson, because it seems like, you know, as maybe you and I are saying, wait a second, they're pretty high on him already.
Yeah, they're really high on him. And again, that's probably just a pessimist in me, or not even pessimistic. It's just, I just keep thinking he's 21, yeah. And he's supposed to be the guy after Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. That's what I always come back to. And that's a lot of pressure and a lot of spotlight to be under. And he, you know, he's got broad shoulders, so he might be ready for it. I think the most telling thing from our sit down with Shane, which obviously wasn't about like team personnel moves and decisions and free agency, more so about, you know, players you've got under contract now. You know, Anthony getting healthy. What do you want to see for this offense in particular? His eyes lit up when he talked about Anthony as a playmaker, not with his legs and the cannon arm. It was just like his eyes lit up when we talked about Anthony's reads and how he sees the defense and how he isn't one to rush through his progressions and to just go with the, okay, all right, coach said throw it here, I'm going to throw it here. He said he has a very good mind when it comes to getting through his progressions, revisiting them throughout, you know, that small window where they're running routes and things like that, and then making a decision. Because he was like, you know, Shane was like, man, sometimes you can see it on the sideline, like, hey, that guy's open, get him a ball. And he said with Anthony, there were moments in that four-game stretch that he played where as soon as he's thinking, okay, that ball has to be out, Anthony's throwing it. And so he felt like that was an underrated part of his game coming out of Florida and maybe something that we didn't really get to appreciate in totality because his rookie season was so short. But Shane, you know, we even asked about the health factor as well. You know, how do you keep him healthy? And he said more or less like, obviously it is a factor. It is something they have to consider. But what makes Anthony special is that dual threat capability. And it's not just the running part, it's just the threat of running, which changes the math on defense a lot. And I think I asked him, hey, you're going to have Jonathan Taylor and Anthony Richardson back there together for more than two snaps this year, hopefully. And he just looked at me like, yeah, I know. And I was like, you got two aliens. And he just nodded his head like, yeah, I got two, you know, guys who are not from Earth back there athletically. And that, too, could be pretty special. So I asked Shane straight up, and, you know, he kind of looked at me like, oh, man, you really going to put my feet to the fire? Yes, I am. I was like, hey, is Anthony going to be available when OTA start up next month? And he said that he should be. They're expecting him to be. Chris Bell said the same thing. So, you know, it's my understanding that he could be limited. He could, like, come out and obviously be, like, on a snap count, throw count, whatever the case may be, as they ease him back into things. But I would be, in all seriousness, I would be shocked if he wasn't out there and participating, you know, helmet on, throwing the ball in some capacity next month when you have a chance to really begin the 2024 season. So I'm excited about that, obviously, because we haven't seen Anthony throw since the injury, at least not, you know, live in person. And I know he kind of got everyone excited when he was at that first round game with Florida and Colorado the other night.
Yeah.
Last week.
Waving his arms around. Yeah.
Three guitar and he's moving that shoulder really, really good. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's more like, you know, again, me being the football guy, I'm like, man, that's more important than this game right now for the Colts, obviously. So he looks like he's moving good and they're really high on him. They think that he really can be the guy, and it's ultimately just going to come down to his health and his ability to, you know, stay on the field and be available. But yeah, and even myself, I think that Anthony is a better processor and probably a better just pure passer than I probably thought he was coming out. Maybe that's a little bit of my fault. Didn't watch enough tape or didn't see it. I'm not some scout, obviously. But yeah, the flashes that they showed last year, that he showed last year, I think it's fair to say Shane and Chris Ballard and obviously, you know, Jim Irsay, who did not make it to the owners' meetings, by the way, they are all believers that those weren't just flashes, but just like previews of what he's going to really become. And so I'm excited for his second season, mainly because, you know, as a reporter, when the team drafts number four overall player and it's a quarterback, you want to see him play. And so I know he wants to see himself play, and that'll be exciting to see.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
The flashes were everything I hoped they would be last year. I really don't feel like there was nearly as much downside as even I thought there was going to be. Not downside, but, you know, some of the negatives, some of the growing pains I thought he was going to have. I thought they were going to be there for sure. But I also again, I was on record of saying I think he was more ready than people were giving him credit for, and I think he showed
That's
that.
Fair.
So I'm very excited to see what year two looks like. I was very excited to read, you know, your stories about how engaged he stayed throughout the season. You know, I was watching, I think it was that video the Colts put out. Colts media team is still among the best in the NFL. So watching the video on Shane Steichen and what his family was going through in the, you know, throughout the season. But they had, you know, there were just shots of Anthony Richardson with his team, especially when they were losing to Houston at the end of the season. And I know you wrote about it because you had Chris Ballard telling me, make sure you feel this, understand what's going on here. But he looked, you know, he looked just as shaken and disappointed as his teammates did in that moment. And I just appreciate that. I really do. I think he's putting in the time, the effort, the emotion that is required to be a leader and a quarterback of this team, to be the next Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck. Not putting him on that tier yet, but he's putting himself on the path to be that guy. And I appreciate that. Now, I say all that, and I think in my head, give me one more weapon. Just give me one more. Like, I love Michael Pittman Jr.
Hear you.
I love Josh Downs in the slot. I think Alec Pierce is probably going to end up settling in as a good four in the NFL, which, again, not to knock the guy. I think he's a good field stretcher, good blocker. That's fine. But give me one more dude. If it's a Brock Bowers type tight end, great. If it's a Brian Thomas type receiver, cool. Like, or deep receiver class. So I'm not even saying you got to do it in the first round. You could probably do it in the second round if you want. And
that's where I'm at. Because to me,
Chris Ballard's shown it. He's drafted Michael Pittman in the second round. It was a great pick. Like, you could find these dudes. So
I agree.
One more. One more weapon.
Man,
I think the running game is going to be special, like you said.
I hear you, and that's why. Just overall, I'm like, man. Is it worth signing a veteran cornerback you know you can rely on? That way you're not pigeonholed into drafting a cornerback at 15 if you still feel like you want to upgrade and add some more talent there. Because to me, if Brian Thomas Jr. is there at 15, like, the dude is perfect for this system. I think that if you give another toy to Anthony Richardson and Shane Steichen, it increases the value of it because of those two guys and what they mean to this franchise. Now, obviously, we have to wait and see, but I'm kind of with you on that, where you probably want one more playmaker. I did ask about Jelani. You know, Chris Ballard was saying that he can't be, you know, fully sold on him just because he hasn't seen enough with the health and things like that. But he's, you know, he's excited for him to come back, and he thinks that, you know, Jelani can fill some of those tight end holes, because he really is. If he's healthy, and maybe we would have had the answer to this last year if he was, but it's like he has all the traits to do all the tight end jobs. He's big enough to block. He's agile enough to get out in space. Big body, big target. He can catch the ball. He has explosive play potential. All the things you want. But again, he hasn't really proven it yet. And I just go back to, and it's a deep wide receiver class, so maybe you don't even go wide receiver in the first round. Maybe is it second round? Something. But I do think that they should, you know, absolutely look at pass catcher of some sort in the first two rounds to add a guy. Now, Chris Ballard said that they're high on Alec Pierce still. They feel like he can do more. And obviously, he wasn't used to his potential last year because Gardner Minshew just couldn't push the ball down the field. That's just the bottom
line. That's totally fair. It's totally fair. I agree with that.
But they talk about, you know, hey, Alec has a little bit more variety in his game. We're going to have to see it. Unless you want him just running a bunch of go routes next year, which is what he did last year as well. He had some moments where he came over the middle and things like that, but his bread and butter is to be the jump ball, contested, deep threat guy. And obviously, with Anthony coming back, will change that. But I'm with you on maybe you want to add just one more playmaker at a skill position, particularly as a pass catcher, because it could make all the difference for your offense and for ultimately Anthony's confidence and comfortability under center. Because I just don't think that we should crown him just yet, which is what Chris Ballard always said. That's his famous line. And as high as they are on him, I'm like, okay, if you think that he can elevate this team, give him every reason to. Similar to how the Titans have done for Will Levis, where it's like, we're giving you no doubt as to are you the guy or not. And obviously, I think Anthony is people are higher on him than Will Levis. But I just think about that, you know, the Titans gave Will some pretty good players to work with. Colts, obviously, you retain Michael Pittman Jr. You have JT, who should be healthy in the backfield. you have a guy in Josh Downs who talking to Shane, talking to Chris Ballard. They loved what he was able to do last year. And then now it's like, can you get that one more piece to really make this offense go to another level where, you know, and again, you can't get, in my opinion, a wide receiver in particular of this caliber on the free agent market now. It just doesn't happen. Great receivers don't become free agents. The really good ones get snapped up really fast. And so, and you have to pay a lot of money for them, like a Calvin Ridley. You have a chance to go get probably a really good player, really young player, obviously, but a playmaker and someone that can grow with Anthony Richardson. And I don't see why you wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, the best part about Shane Steichen to me is that I don't think it matters if it's a tight end or a receiver. Like,
right.
It can, obviously. Like, yeah, I think ideally you fit in that other outside receiver. So you have Pittman, the new playmaker, and Downs in the slot, and then you have Pierce as your rotational four. That's a great plan. But I also think a guy like Shane Steichen could say, oh, you're going to give me like a freak tight end like Brock Bauer? Sure, I'll feature him. I can figure that out too. Like, I don't think with a mind like Shane Steichen, you limit to the kind of players that he can make work. He is very adaptable and can make all kinds of different playmakers work. I think you just need to give him the tools to do it. Again, I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that this should be a not a run-first team. I think that maybe is an exaggeration. I don't think the NFL has that many run-first teams anymore, a couple of them, I suppose. But they will be a really good running team and will rely heavily on it with Jonathan Taylor after having paid him. So I don't think another weapon is the most pressing need. I think right now secondary clearly is. But as you said, man, it would be nice to make Anthony Richardson's life just a little bit easier going into year two. Before we wrap things up here, I wanted to ask you, we had a couple rule changes at the NFL owners meetings. We don't have to get too far into it. I just kind of wanted to make you know, I don't know if you've looked into the kickoff rule a little bit, but there's been some speculation that there's going to be a lot more returns now. I mean, a lot more returns now. And it won't be as dangerous of a play because there won't be guys running full speed as they did before. It'll be more like the XFL setup. You guys should go on The Athletic and look at Ted Wynn's story on it. He did a really good job of kind of breaking down what the kickoffs will look like. But he did also propose at the end that maybe not all the time, but in clutch moments, you might see guys like he had proposed Saquon Barkley or Christian McCaffrey or Deebo Samuel returning these kicks because you need an impact play. Now, I'm wondering, do you think the Colts are the type of team that will take the quote-unquote chance by putting one of their star players back there to return kicks? Do you think they'll just go with the traditional kick returner? And if you had, you know, fourth quarter need a play, are you going to see, do you think we might see Jonathan Taylor back there at any point?
Man, I think we could. Chris Ballard said he thought about it a lot. He wouldn't obviously reveal any tactics just yet. And he also mentioned, and it was a couple coaches that said this as well, I believe it was Detroit and Dan Campbell as well. He was saying, like, it's the unknown. So the way this kickoff approach, this new kickoff approach, where really you probably need two returners because you can kick it either way and all those different things. And I would encourage you all to just Google or go on YouTube and like XFL kickoff, because me trying to explain it to you, and yeah, they gave us, Jim, they emailed us like a chart from the league, and I was like, this chart stinks. Where's the link to the video? Like, I don't want to look at a chart because I'm like, the chart's going to make me feel like I'm more confused than I was. But all that to say, what we see in week one might look a lot different than what we see in week 18, just because, you know, the league gets smarter, the teams get smarter, they use different tactics. But ultimately, it's to bring back that excitement to the game without the severity of the speed and the collisions and the hits. So can it seem gimmicky to some people? Perhaps. But I think with all things, you're like, no, I don't like that. And then they do it. It's like, oh, you know what? Maybe it's not too bad to get the best of both worlds, where they're more protected and they have more opportunities to kind of change the game. But I do think if there is a team or a coach that is willing to exploit every little thing, it is Shane. And so I am, you know, I can't wait to, you know, bug him when it comes to some random Friday. I'm going to be like, hey, Shane, you mind if I get this one-off question to you about the kickoffs, something like that? And he's going to, you know, become a human and really open up, because he's pretty guarded, not guarded. He's kind of just like, hey, football. But if you ask him a specific football question that he really enjoys, similar to the Anthony Richardson processing question, his eyes will light up. And I'm sure he's had a lot of thoughts about, you know, maximizing that opportunity to, you know, get better field position, to, you know, get better players back there, to make plays, also how to defend it, all those things. And so I'm curious to see it in action for sure, because it is a drastic change from what we saw. But ultimately, from what I understood and just talking to different people at the league meetings and, you know, hearing from NFL executives and Roger Goodell, they wanted more plays to be made in the kickoff game, because they just rarely happen. I mean, pretty much every team had a kicker at one point where it was just like, just kick it out of the back of the end zone and make them play.
Yep.
But right. Now it forces teams to, you know, be more in action and forces more action, more playmaking, and a little bit more, I guess, variety in how the game is played, which is always good, I think, for the parity of the league, the competitive nature of it, and just the excitement overall, because who doesn't like a good kickoff return? So, you know, the Chiefs signed a rugby guy who might, you know, be involved in that thing for them. I know that Jamal Agnew, I believe, is still out there, still available, because the Colts look into adding him as a guy, you know, to be a return man. I know the Steelers responded by, you know, adding Cardell Patterson, who had been out of the league, I believe. You know, picked him up, really great returner. And I think they were going to see different body types, different builds. I can go all and on. Yeah, I can go on and on about this, but it's going to be something where I just want to see it live in person. So I'll be very locked into the preseason games to see it on an NFL level and just how, again, the league responds to it, adapts to it, and ultimately tries to use it to their advantage.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, I think you're going to see, you mentioned the returner is going to have different body types. I think you might see certain players drafted to do certain different things. You might even see, like, not starting offensive linemen, but rotational offensive linemen out on the field doing that kind of stuff. Maybe you will see some starting offensive linemen out there. If you look at Ted Wynn's story on The Athletic right now that went up, it was really cool, but he's got some XFL concepts that look like running concepts. There's some pin pull there. There's a reverse. Like, there's different kinds of things that you can do, kind of like the running game, to maximize the return. So it's gonna be a lot of fun to see what teams do. And as you said, Shane Steichen, being such an innovative mind, you know, trying to bring some of that creativity to the kick return will be a lot of fun. Last thing, because we're running out of time here, is your quick thoughts. I know you wrote a great story on the reaction the NFL was having to the swivel hip drop tackle rule. Just your thoughts on, again, people can go read about what it is, but your thoughts on how it's going to affect the game and whether or not you like the rule or you think it's going to cause more issues.
I like the rule. I think that when we saw some of the video of the severe swivel hip drop tackles, it wasn't even the fact that players get hurt from it. They just get hurt severely. Like, if you swivel hip drop tackle someone, there's a good chance you might roll up on their ankles, their knees. And so you're seeing guys not just get hurt, but get hurt badly. You know, Kenyon Drake, who was with the Colts actually last season, briefly during the preseason or during training camp, you know, he had his ankle rolled up on and broken a few years ago from that type of tackle. And the league basically said it's happening too often. They did the math. It happens about once per game, 230 times last year, resulting in about 15 players getting hurt and missing at least one game because of it. The biggest star that had that happen to them was, you know, Mark Andrews. And so I think that it's probably a good rule. But my question is, how will it be enforced? Because right now it is solely on the refs to call it in real time. And then they also have to understand, as players and coaches, you can't review it and you can't challenge it. So that, to me, is going to be the gray area that makes everyone a bit antsy, because, you know, if you get it right, fine. But if you call a bang bang play or a bang bang tackle, or you don't see it from, you know, because angles are everything in football, guys get moved around. Like, I'm just curious to know, like, man, I'm just picturing it now. Playoff game, fourth quarter, final drive, you get a stop, and they're like, well, you swivel hip drop tackled this guy, and it's a questionable call, and they replay it over and over again. It's super slow mo, like they do, and it's like, ah, that wasn't against the rules, and it costs you. So I asked Roger Goodell about it. He was saying that he expect the league to adjust accordingly. He did mention that even if it isn't called in real time, that they will review the film like they always do with all the different plays, and they'll find guys to sort of reinforce that this tackle can't be used. And so I know Zaire Franklin weighed in on it. Chris Ballard did too. He was just saying, comes down to, hey, we got to teach our guys how to play, how to tackle. He's like, we don't teach this type of tackle, obviously, but we have to reinforce the idea of making sure that we don't even do it out of desperation, because the penalty for it is 15 yards, automatic first down. And so, you know, I know that Zaire Franklin was not very happy about it. He said, you know, he called the rule dumb. And
yeah, he did.
Called it stupid as well. And now he's saying this, and this is, I kind of hear where he's coming from, because as a defender, you can't hit high because of the concussions. You can't hit quarterbacks hardly at all. You definitely can't hit them low. That's a roughing the passer penalty.
Can't fall on them.
Can't fall on them. Obviously, no horse tackling, which was taken out of the league years ago. Can't leave the head of your helmet, the crown of your helmet. But now it's like, I can't drop my weight on this guy. If I grab hands on him, do I just take him for a ride? Like, how do you get him to the ground? And so he said, you keep tweaking and maneuvering and shifting the game, you're going to eventually come up with something that's unrecognizable. And I don't know if I would go that far, but it is, I do feel for the defensive players who have to deal with yet another adjustment. But the bottom line is, the league will always be pro offense and pro scoring, because it's entertainment. They did mention that how scoring was a little bit down last year than in years past.
Yeah, a lot down.
And they wanted to. It actually wasn't that bad. I think like a point and a half or something like that. It wasn't crazy.
Well, it's the lowest it's been in a long time, I think.
Well,
you're right.
That's fair.
Not total. Yeah, but totally.
Exactly.
Right.
That's the concept they put it in. Like, it's lower than it's been in like in a while, but it wasn't like they dropped 5 points
sure.
per game.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I know Zaire doesn't want to hear this, but it's like, brother, you know, you're in a league where you just aren't as loved as your offensive counterparts, and it's just what it is. But I think that it's one of those things where we're going to hear a lot about it. But the moment that flag is thrown on a questionable call in a really, really big game, that's when I think we're going to see, you know, maybe we revisit this. And you know, if it's, for example, last 2 minutes, can you review it? I know the Colts actually pitched that idea of the whole last 2 minutes, you can review any penalty or call or whatever. Didn't get any traction on that at all. So it's not going to happen. But, man, Jim, it's interesting to say the least. And I'll let you weigh in here before we get out of here.
I think, man, I didn't want to be a referee before, and I certainly don't want to be one now. I mean, it's just more responsibility, more to look out for, more to call, more to try to have to enforce. It's a lot, man. And I think some of the rules they added, they've given a little bit more power to the replay review official, who can kind of come down and say, no, that wasn't, or yes, that was, not for this particular tackle, but in general. So I think that's good. I think the more power we end up giving, and by we, I mean the NFL ends up giving to the replay official in the booth who has access to watching these things and saying, nah, that wasn't roughing the passer. No, that wasn't a horse collar tackle. I think that's better. I mean, again, I think you can have those decisions made pretty quickly and have, you know, penalties called or flags picked up in the right way. So I think that's moving in the right direction, but this is going to be tough. It's going to be a tough first year for it. Like any new rule, a lot of times it's the first year is a learning process. So it'll be challenging. But yeah, I understand why the rule was made. And again, you want to help player safety. It is going to be challenging to enforce, I think. And I think the fines are, you know, going to continue to upset players because they were fined at a pretty high level last year and will be again at that with this. So yeah, so that'll be it for us. I mean, man, we covered a lot of ground there. We'll probably take a little bit of a break here unless the Colts make some news. And then we'll get into pre-draft mode because, I mean, I think we already are in pre-draft mode, but, unless the Colts make some big news, there's not going to be quite as much to talk about other than speculation. We'll maybe do some mock drafts. James will have some of that coming up here in the next couple weeks.
Yep.
Some big boards, some things like that. But until then, check out The Athletic and look for James's work. He's got a cool story on the cornerback situation coming up. So look out for that. But until then, talk to you later.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.